Today on ENR's Critical Path Podcast, we talk to a globe-trotting humanitarian bridge builder, president and CEO, IMAX movie star, TED Talk speaker, and an entrepreneur who is venturing into a whole new industry. And she's not even 40. This is Eileen Cho.
And I'm Jeff Yoders.
And this is an ENR Exec Talk. Today, we're talking with Avery Bang. She has spent the last 15 years building Bridges to Prosperity, a social enterprise that provides isolated communities with access to healthcare, education, and economic opportunities by building trail bridges over impassable rivers. Under her leadership, B2P has connected over 1.2 million people around the world. Avery was featured in the IMAX film Dream Big and has spoken on stages ranging from TED to the UN. She is a distinguished alumni of the University of Iowa, where she had degrees in studio art and civil engineering, the University of Colorado at Boulder, where she completed a master's in geotechnical engineering, and an MBA from the University of Oxford, and an honorary doctorate degree from Clarkson University. Ava, you're really smart.
That's very generous. Thanks, Eileen.
Well, welcome to the podcast. Avery, I met you years and years ago when you were a child.
Oh, please don't.
at the International Bridge Conference. And you were doing a presentation on what was then a budding Bridges to Prosperity. Can you kind of reminisce about that beginning?
Yeah, well, gosh, it seems like just yesterday and also forever ago. But,
yes.
You know, I think what's always fun is you go to those big conferences kind of, well, at least in my mid-20s, just totally blind and hoping someone would want to talk to me. You know, like, who's going to want to talk to this kid, you know, straight off the plane from a rural, you know, bridge build somewhere in Latin America. And I remember so distinctly, Eileen, like, you were just so friendly and so approachable, and you came to my talk, and we you know, had a good chat. And then later, I figured out that you, like, worked at ENR, and I was like, oh my gosh, what did I say, you know?
Well, what you said was pretty impressive. I'll never forget this young, beautiful blonde woman sticking out like a sore thumb amongst all the bridge engineers. And then you were captivating everyone in the room.
Well, that's very generous. But it was, I think, in general, more intimidating for me because obviously there aren't a lot of women in the industry. And then you kind of couple that also with the kind of age insecurity that a lot of us have, or at least certainly I have. And there's this otherness. Like, I was both younger and a woman at this conference where everyone is phenomenal. And, you know, the infrastructure.
Yeah, they're great people.
Oh, my God. They're approachable and great, but they're also building the world's most important infrastructure. And at that time, I don't think I really categorized myself in that same audience. Although, over time, I've kind of seen the work we do as being more similar than not.
Yeah, and the work to do is building trail bridges, building bridges in very rural areas. These are the places that need access really more than anywhere else, right?
Well, you know, I don't know if it's more, but it's just more, it's more obvious, right? Like, when you live entirely in a walking world and you walk to school or you walk to work or to a healthcare clinic, it's really obvious when you can't get there. And, you know, I think, like, in our environment, access is usually a convenience thing, or at least, you know, I live in Denver, so there's very few places I can't get to. It just might mean, like, oh, there's something's closed, I need to go another way. But it's really obvious in places, even like, you know, the Brooklyn Bridge in New York City or the, you know, the San Francisco Bay Bridge, you're having these really obvious places where people all of a sudden are like, wow, I have access I didn't have before. And I think in the places where we work, it's always that case. Like, 100% of our projects are, like, living next to the Golden Gate Bridge, which is kind of cool.
I remember you luring me to Nicaragua a few years ago, where I lived in a tent, got eaten alive by mosquitoes, and jumped into a river with all my clothes on because there was no bathing facilities. But it was amazing to see how much that bridge meant to the local community. It really was a lifeline.
It's transformative. And I think one of the things that, like, really took me the first time I ever built a bridge was just the deep appreciation for construction. Like, wow, this is literally the thing that's going to change the lives of not only us, but our kids and our kids' kids. And, you know, like, I think coming from the States, where construction oftentimes is seen a little bit inconvenient, if you will, it was, like, really, really honoring. Like, wow, I get to be kind of a hero. And I don't know, Eileen, I remember, you know, the mosquito bites and like, a lot of the things that are more challenging about some of those trips. But it's the long-term remembrance that you know, people, when they really realize the difference that is made in their lives from this infrastructure, that like that memory and that kind of knowingness is really what's an amazing, I think, life-changing takeaway from being involved in these kind of smaller projects.
I'm glad you mentioned. Go ahead.
Sorry. Can you give us a sense of how many countries Bridges to Prosperity has now been in?
Yeah, Bridges to Prosperity has worked in 21 countries, and we've had kind of our arms and fingers in many others where there's a need for consulting or support or this idea of like how could we connect our communities. So we currently are really quite focused in East Africa, but we have a long history throughout Latin America as well.
I just wanted to ask about, you mentioned growing up in Iowa, and, you know, as someone from a rural area growing up in Pennsylvania, you realize how the infrastructure is older in those places. There are places where, you know, access really isn't a convenience. And, did that influence your desire to start this wonderful organization?
Wow, Jeff, I didn't realize you're a fellow kind of middle stater. I think it gives a different perspective, right? Like, I can't, you know, claim to have spent a lot of time in rural Pennsylvania, but certainly in Iowa, you know, my grandfather's, he was an electrician, and my grandma was a teacher, but kind of the after hours and before hours activity was to really run a farm like so many others. And, you know, that farm ended up, really getting cut in half by the interstate system. And that is in its own way kind of the opposite effect of like going from having access to all of your land to not also has a pretty debilitating effect. And, you know, I think I was able to really appreciate and see what it's like to be able to go exactly 1 mile over, you know, on the road system. It's like 1 mile grids to get to the next road. And if one of those roads went out or one of those little culvert bridges was gone, you know, that's a pretty significant inconvenience. And a lot of times it actually meant that you couldn't get to where you needed to go without getting, with especially the interstate system coming and cutting through, you really couldn't get there. And, you know, that, I think that some type of empathy, at least my felt sense of, you know, that is possible, did certainly inform my sense of empathy of like, wow, there are a billion people, like 1 in 7 people that can't get to where they need to go, and they walk everywhere. Like, that's a even more wild reality than the context where I grew up.
some of these countries that P2P has worked in, can you give us a sense? I mean, are you in touch with any of these communities or maybe locals who your volunteers, you know, taught or mentored so they could keep building bridges?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, I don't know how many people here are on WhatsApp, but that's been something that's been pretty consistently available for the last 15 years in most of the places where we've worked. And so it's been such a cool experience to kind of come of my adult age with friends in so many corners around the world. Like, I keep in touch with, a woman, Bonchomlik, in rural Ethiopia, who ended up going to nursing school and going back into her community and really, you know, serving her community in a way that, like, that group had never had a nurse before. And, you know, I keep in touch with folks that I've had homestays, you know, learning broken Spanish. There's just, like, this wealth of love and friendship and, you know, like a lot of co-learning that's happened for me at least. And a lot of these folks, I think, even if it's not me personally, if it's another B2P employee or more likely a B2P volunteer, like these are friends for life. And, you know, whether it's in Nicaragua and coming in and like learning how to build the bridge and keeping in touch with you, Eileen, or whether it's someone in rural Bolivia, you know, I think we really see ourselves as a pretty connected global community. And it's quite a treat to be part of.
I'm glad you brought up bridges that disconnect communities and other roads that do and other infrastructure projects, because that's something we've been talking about here at ENR. We're doing a series on places like the Hill District in Pittsburgh, where a project cut a community off, and how important it is to build new infrastructure to keep that, make those places accessible again. Is that something you're focused on?
At a human level, Jeff, yeah, absolutely. Like, I think, you know, the way that we've built infrastructure intentionally or otherwise, to, you know, cut off and segregate our communities in a historical sense, I think is really needs to be fixed. I don't think that that's something Bridges to Prosperity has necessarily come across. Like the places where we work, we are the only really infrastructure asset. There might be a hospital or a clinic or a school, but we're not like competing with, you know, helping to disconnect communities so much. But, you know, I look here in Denver and, you know, in Interstate 70, which kind of goes from the airport from the east into the mountains to the west, it really just cut right through the city. And, you know, we've got another interstate, I-70 or 25 that goes north-south. And in those corridors where those communities that got cut, they continue to be much less wealthy, you know, like in terms of both health and socioeconomic status. Like it's this, you know, one of them ended up being a Superfund site. And I think it's important that we look back on that and say, like, what is it that we can do now in our new infrastructure planning to really do the best we can to reconnect some of those communities where we frankly cut off and isolated.
Yeah, stay tuned. ENR will be doing a series of articles on environmental justice and infrastructure and equity. So
cool.
That's a great point to bring up. Give us a sense of how much B2P has grown, because our understanding is you're about to retreat from your current position.
The news is out. Yeah. Well, you know, I think 15 years ago when I got started, I remember I was actually interviewing with Black & Veatch at the time. And I also had an application in for the Peace Corps. And then I was volunteering for this like no employee thing, Bridges to Prosperity. And at the time I remember being like, well, you know, it just needs a little kickstart. This is a big idea and someone really great needs to come along and like run with it. And, you know, every year I'd kind of check back in and be like, wow, why is no one else doing this? This is such a big idea and there's such a huge issue and problem and it needs to be solved. And, you know, to kind of cut to the chase, the last few years I've started to really feel like the organization is bigger than I am in a good way. You know, we have the structures in place and the executive team and the board and, you know, from a fiduciary perspective, we're financially extraordinarily well set out. And I started to think again about what's that next impact that I can make? And is it going to be a career all in bridges or is it a career that might span some other problems? And I kind of started to get excited about the idea that Bridges to Prosperity could have our next season of leadership. So we're actually in the middle of a CEO search right now, and we're very optimistic about some of the candidates that are coming forth. So I'll be moving to the board of directors and still you know, unabashedly super excited about B2P and will continue to support in all these ways, but will no longer kind of be the chief executive officer come here this summer. So that's what's out the door. And what's coming in is, Eileen, do you care about that? Do you want to know what's next?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. Yeah, I'm super excited that I'm going to be joining Graycon. It's a smaller outfit here in the construction space here in the Denver metro area. And it was the company itself was acquired by one of my mentors and friends, Scott Lynn, who's currently the chairman. It's currently run by a great, amazing visionary, Derek, and they've got a really incredible team where they're focused on effectively acquiring smaller companies that want to continue having the great culture and being able to have, you know, the great impacts that they have, but come into the Graycon family. And so there's a number of really interesting businesses that they have and a couple different business lines that they're excited about. And currently, I am super excited to learn more about their hydropower business and some of their the teams they've got working in that space.
Yeah, sounds like a great opportunity. You're growing your nonprofit the way you have. Is there any advice you have for other people who have this kind of entrepreneurial dream?
Oh, man. I feel like I should be asking the audience that. Any advice for someone making it? You know, I think for people who have the entrepreneurial zest, it took me a while to realize it was happening. You know, I think I'm certainly when I first met Eileen, I didn't really yet think it was a credible, real thing. And in hindsight, it really was. Like I was invited to keynote this incredibly important conference. So obviously what we were doing was important enough at that point to be, you know, at least valid enough to have a voice. And, you know, I think it's like, I don't know, Jeff, like my sense of to be an entrepreneur is to kind of always not feel good enough then we probably have a lot of therapy to do about that. But, you know, it's never quite there. It's got to always do more. And it kind of keep, there's this fuel to the fire, you know, like, well, if we just did this, right. Or if we just changed that, yeah. It's not there. And that never enoughness is both a, you know, a blessing and a curse, because mm-hmm. like literally every day I wake up and I'm like, oh man, there's all these things we got to do. And it's never like a coast. And I'm like, man, I wish I was a coaster. Because, you know, for the other entrepreneurs out there that especially have a social impact bent, you know, it's not only are you kind of always feeling like there's more you could do, but there's this huge time urgency. It's like people are drowning in rivers.
Right.
Yeah.
Kids are not going to school. And that is just can create kind of almost an obsessive response mechanism where like, we've got to solve this problem now. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think at some level that can be pretty unhealthy, honestly, if not kind of kept in check and balance with, you know, you have to have a little patience as well.
Oh, wow. So do you know much about hydrogen? Is this a learning experience for you?
Well, I don't. So here's the thing. It's like hydropower from the dam's perspective, I have a kind of a compulsory background knowledge given a geotechnical engineering degree. Mm-hmm. And, you know, like you go through civil engineering, you have some understanding of the, you know, hydrology and hydraulics. But honestly, no. And I think that's part of what I'm excited about is, you know, I think engineers are the type of people who really love to learn and to problem solve. And, you know, I think in the bridge world, at least with Bridges to Prosperity Bridges, I can't tell you how many conversations and dozens and hours, hundreds of hours spent really getting into the nuanced detail of the technical parts. And I kind of sense have stopped being so close to the technical part of it. And I'm thrilled to get to jump back into something that I really have a lot of unknowns about. And I don't know if Jeff, you guys have heard of the kind of 2x2 matrix. I learned about this in business school, but there's like a 2x2 and the lower or the upper right is known knowns. So things I know and things I know that I know, you know, like I know everything. Then there's things mm-hmm. that you, in the bottom left, it's like the unknown unknowns. And you're really trying to go from the unknown unknowns to the known unknowns. So you can at least know that you don't know them, those things. Mm-hmm. And then
I think there was a Donald Rumsfeld book about this one time.
Yeah. Oh, really? Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I'm sure it's more complex. I got a dumbed down version, you know, business school. They don't teach us anything too deep. But like I think about that a lot. It's like when you exist in the known knowns for too long, it's not to say you're not learning every day, but I think that there's a lot to be said about really being, you know, driven by this idea of moving those unknown unknowns into like at least knowing that you don't know them and then hopefully building and acquiring those skills. So punchline, I don't know that much yet, but I hope I will next time we have a chat.
Yeah. As an engineer, you know, solving the problems is that's exciting. That's new stuff, right?
Yeah, right. Yeah. And it's keeps you on your toes, put lightly.
No kidding. Well, I know that my quadrant of I know what I don't know is really huge. So
mine too.
That's an interesting.
Do you feel like over age, so, honestly, like I feel like every year goes by, I'm like, oh my gosh, there's more I don't know. Or is that,
oh, yeah.
That just me?
Oh yeah, definitely. No, I'm in there.
It's not just you.
Well, I think it's like with the situation we're in now, you know, we were speaking about conferences. It's God, I haven't been to a conference in so long. What am I missing out on learning about?
Absolutely.
And, you know, the kids aren't in school today. We heard that, hey, maybe in fall, everyone's really going to go back. So there's so much more knowledge that hasn't been gained, it seems mm-hmm. like.
I mean, how did you guys deal with this? Because I had the very beginning of COVID, I really got on this, like, let's educate myself online thing. And then I was so Zoom exhausted. I like mm-hmm. even stopped reading books for a hot minute. Like, did you guys have that experience at all?
I got some fatigue on it. Like, this is my fourth Zoom today. So you're probably hearing some Zoom fatigue.
Totally.
Yeah, I was kind of begrudging about having to show my face on Zoom and having to do the Zoom meetings. And it just, you know, we tried to do the happy hours virtually. And I'm like, it's just not the same.
Definitely not the
same. I'm just sitting here all by myself with a drink. This is depressing.
Totally. Yeah. Definitely had to start really, you know, we're not actually in company anymore. So is it, are we drinking alone or are we drinking in company?
I drink alone, like the song says.
Yeah. That line started to get very blurred here in the last.
Sure. Right. Yeah.
And yeah, I miss the International Bridge Conference. I mean, I like you said, I mean, obviously I learned about Bridges to Prosperity by meeting you there. I've met so many bridge engineers and seen so many novel projects, and it's really something hopefully we can all get back to soon.
I mean, I'm there. Yeah. I mean, the mm-hmm. conference circuit's something where I don't think can go away. I'm sure it will be supplemented in some great, very innovative
virtual fashion.
Sure, I'm sure. And you guys, I'm very certain we'll be at the front of that. But there's something about just like, who are you? You know, where are mm-hmm. you here from? And like that kind of, you know,
networking, face to face, human.
I miss it a lot. I really do.
Yeah.
Do you miss the international travel for the bridges in Nicaragua and all these other places?
Yeah, Jeff, that's probably the question of the year, honestly. I do and I don't. I think in the beginning there's like, I think of it like inertia, where, mm-hmm. you know, for the last, you know, 12, 13 years in particular, just really been in motion and on the plane way more than I've been still or at home. And I really resisted. I was like, get me on a plane. You know, I was like probably more ready to be on a plane than I should have been given the uncertainty with the, you know, health effects. And, as time passed, I moved to the mountains. I'm actually calling in from outside Winter Park, Colorado. Hello.
Nice.
I spend more time in nature. And I went to Minneapolis last weekend to see a really good friend. And it was like the first time I'd been on a plane in over a year. And I was like, I don't miss it. In the national part, like there's so much culture and food and language and really interesting people. But that also at some like point became exhausting and I didn't even realize it. Mm-hmm. Like keep doing it because that's what you do every day. That's what you do every month. And, you know, you get your couple hundred thousand miles on that airline and that's just what you do.
Right.
And I really, you know, I'm not going to miss that kind of
that, nonstop.
Yeah, yeah.
The churn, so to speak, you know?
Totally, absolutely, yeah. It feels like the hamster wheel all of a sudden stopped. And like I like first tumbled and like hit my face on those bars, you know? And now I'm like, okay, I can get back on some of the wheel, but I don't want to go at that speed. And I certainly don't want to do some of those things, you know?
Right.
Yeah.
What about you guys? Are you missing the travel?
I took my first flight to a wedding in Houston. I'm in Chicago for everyone who doesn't know where I'm from. But I went down to Houston for a wedding and I enjoyed seeing all my Texas friends. And, you know, the wedding was beautiful. The bride was lovely. But the travel experience, I could give back. It's like, okay, yeah. You took airlines and you made them a little bit worse.
Totally.
Well, it's human nature, isn't it? Like during that year 2020, especially, you know, 3 months in or so, I felt so isolated, so lonely, so cut off that I was like, I miss being crowded at an airport. I miss sitting around with strangers. And I realize, of course, that within a couple of actual flights, that feeling will go away very rapidly.
Totally.
But I do miss the conferences.
Yeah.
So yes. Jeff and I, our the last business trip we took, we went to Las Vegas. It was him, me, and Jeff Rubenstone. And we had a great time. And that was that.
Yeah, that was Con Expo, and everything hit. That was March 2020. So it was
right.
Quick, everyone, get out of Las Vegas.
Yeah.
Oh man, that was not a place I'd want to be, actually.
No, it was weird.
It was strange because everyone, you know, they ended the conference early, a day early, right?
Oh.
But still, we weren't quite sure how bad this thing was going to be. Was it just going to be a glorified flu or something? And you know, we're sort of banging elbows and going, okay, I guess we're not supposed to shake hands. And you know, that's the thing about a conference, though. I came away with a great story in a newsmaker. You know, Cliff Fetner of Soil Connect.
Oh,
that's why you go to these things, because you find out great ideas.
Yeah, and I did great networking and, you know, met a lot of people and saw new ideas, which is what you do at Con Expo. But then it was all gone. All
how
gone.
Did you guys, you'll come back.
How did you guys do it this year? Like, how did you meet the newsmakers this year? And how did you go about?
It was all virtual.
All virtual.
Okay. Oh, man. Yep.
What was normally a day-long gala with a two-hour cocktail reception and after parties was reduced to maybe about 2 or 3 hours staring at the computer.
Yeah.
Well, you guys did a phenomenal job pivoting, if I may. Like, I think, you know, the Newsmaker
Thanks.
Event
Thank
in
you.
Person is certainly like a life-changing thing to go to. But It was a really well done virtual experience. So, like, you know, you guys deserve a lot of credit. There are many events that have not gone nearly as smoothly or interesting.
Yeah, I know. I've been to a couple of those.
I know.
Or quote unquote been to. Yeah. And no, you know, offense to anyone. It's hard. It's credit to our ENR events staff. They're incredibly talented. That's why it came off so well.
Well, you know, we have the obviously nonprofit. We had the big question, do you move your in-person events online and do these fundraisers? And like in the very beginning of COVID, we noticed a few groups had done it extraordinarily well. And we have a running hypothesis that in the beginning, people were not so, to use Jeff's term, COVID fatigued, Zoom fatigued. And I think over time, as we, like our annual events, you know, would have not been early in COVID. It was many, many months later. It was like, are people really going to want to show up to this thing, let alone donate money, especially with much uncertainty? So we actually, you know, it's been really hard on the charitable sector this year, frankly. It was just, you know, having to make the decision, do you or don't you do those kinds of things and take a risk one direction or the other. And, you know, I think that's not only us, that's, I think, a lot of businesses.
Absolutely.
The galas and the events, those are the real fundraising for the sector, right?
Right.
Absolutely. How else do you like come together and feel excited about what the thing is, unless you're getting a bunch of people in an airplane, in our case, which obviously also did not happen. So.
Right. And when COVID hit, did you have B2P staff out there somewhere in the world working on a project? And what happened if that was the case?
Well, you know, what's interesting is because we pay for all this intel and we're tracking all these things, we actually heard about COVID in February and started kind of monitoring and, you know, in hindsight, I should have played the stock market as I had some intel for business. I did not. So I made some mistakes there. But really started to understand the complexity and the strength of what was coming very, very early March. And, you know, we kind of did it in a pretty linear process. Was health and safety of people, health and safety of project, and then really cash preservation. So business, you know, making sure that we could make it through. And, you know, there was... I mean, Eileen, you've seen this, but Jeff, for your sake, we're digging these giant holes. It looks like we're, you know, I hate to say this, but we're digging coffins, you know, like putting people in the ground because it's 6 feet deep. And
6 feet deep, yeah.
Yeah, it's 8 feet wide, and we're digging with shovels, and you're moving rocks by hand. So these are huge behemoth, large excavation pits and, you know, large piles of sand and huge piles of rock that are all kind of, you know, put together really before those final 2 weeks of the bridge going from what doesn't seem like anything to being done. And we've got a bunch of these all over the world, huge open excavation pits. And so, I mean, Eileen, to your question, it was like, we need to immediately go into kind of, you know, red zone of like, how do we make sure that our people are safe? And that doesn't just mean like immediately put everyone back home. And, you know, it's a lot more complex than that. But then also making sure that our projects got to a place where if this thing really did come and really did happen and sweep the world or the continent, in particular, that our projects were not going to create more hazard and more health, you know, concerns than if they weren't there to begin with, like people falling into these pits or cables being strung across a ravine that are not blocked off or yet safe, for example. And so, you know, I'm really extraordinarily proud of the team. We have a pretty sophisticated enterprise risk management system that had already kind of put into place, like what happens when each of these trigger events happen. So we had to, you know, really recall everyone, redo all of our PPE, redo all of our kind of safety protocols, you know, the ways that we'd previously thought of ourselves as kind of best in class in safety. We really had to be like, are we, if there's a pandemic coming through?
Right. Yeah.
And I think that's not probably dissimilar to construction companies here. And actually, to be really candid, a number of firms here in the U.S. helped us do that. Like it was, you know, calls on the WSPs and the Flatiron Constructions and the Walsh Constructions and saying, hey guys, how do you do this? What are you doing right now? I know it's kind of never been done before. And then we got our folks in motion and got those projects tied up at least to a safe place while there was a lot of uncertainty for a few months. And we just got back to full construction capacity in Rwanda here about 2 months ago. So it's definitely been a below capacity higher cost environment for us, but we have continued to build almost all the way through.
Wow.
It's great news. You know, you were able to keep going.
Yeah, lessons learned.
Yeah, we were really fortunate. You know, I think we were considered essential So a lot of organizations mm-hmm. and the places where we were working were really just homebound. So we were able to continue serving, which has been great.
Were there other perils or risks that B2P crews faced besides, you know, pre-COVID? I mean, some of these countries are not quite stable geopolitically.
Well, yeah, they are and they aren't, Eileen. So, you know, I think one of the kind of value systems that Bridges to Prosperity has is that the majority of our staff are from and should be from where we work. And so I think I avoided your question earlier. Did we still have staff there? I think it's like 85 or 90% of our teams live and work and are from where we are working. So, you know, it was very urgent to get the expatriate community out. So anyone that's not, you know, our Venezuelan engineer moving from Rwanda to wherever she's going, and our Italian and our British and our Australian and our American staff that are, you know, every which place, getting them home was a deal. But then you really have the majority of our staff and leadership are actually from and still there in the countries where we're working. And so, you know, I think there's certainly, you know, perceivably different kind of security factors that could come into play. But with COVID, we found out that in a lot of ways, like Rwanda managed the outbreak much better in the beginning than I'd say most countries around the world. Like they had very little spread. Continue to be really, I think, best in class as much as they're able to be for a, you know, landlocked but not island nation. And we've had to just be able to really trust our staff locally and, you know, de-emphasize that kind of role of the foreigner. And that has gone actually extraordinarily well.
Wow.
Shows you the power of local.
Yeah.
Right?
Absolutely.
Sometimes you just have to have a little nudge. I'll own this as a leader, right? Like we've talked about having more local proximal leadership for a really long time. But you kind of become lazy and complicit with like, oh, well, you know, I'm sure it's the same thing that you can imagine someone at Kiewit's like, well, why don't we send in the longtime guy from the Northeast District to go down and do power? Because like, but maybe that works and maybe that doesn't. And I think for us, we think of it as like, there's actually extraordinary talent in the markets where we work, and it's more about finding it than necessarily always trying to, you know, bring folks in.
Yeah, and when you work in a rural area, you know, there's people who know everyone to talk to, and there's it's got its own little ecosystem.
It really does. It really does.
So Avery, will you be traveling? I know you mentioned slowing down the hamster wheel, but you will be doing some travel perhaps for your new gig or not?
Yeah, absolutely. I think it kind of depends. I'm coming in as kind of an entrepreneur in residence, and I really love that. That fits my personality and also my kind of really wanting to balance the learning curve with the, you know, audacity of what I hope to accomplish. And, you know, in the beginning, I think I'll probably be spending more time on projects around the country and certainly some of the offices. But I think the idea would probably be to go and, you know, find acquisitions that could come join the Graycon family of companies and to be part of that. If it's in Colorado, cool. Probably won't be. So I'm sure I'll be on planes plenty, but you know, there's a difference between a couple days a week and being home and
a couple days a week, a couple hundred miles as opposed to you're like halfway around the globe.
Rwanda's a solid 38 hour travel. So you just don't do that in a week or even a day. So I'm quite excited about being a little more local for sure.
Awesome. Avery, congrats and, you know, all the best on your new gig.
Thanks, guys. I really
congratulations.
I'm really excited. And as I know more, I know that sounds pretty stupid, but as I know more, I'd love to share it with you guys. But right now, I'm kind of the unknown quadrant's pretty big. So,
yeah. Well, that won't last long. Your quadrant, that quadrant
unknown unknowns.
You got it. Yeah. So I'd love to keep in touch, guys. And I really appreciate the opportunity to speak with you both today.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks for joining us.
My pleasure.
This has been an ENR Exec Talk with Avery Bang. I'm Eileen Cho.
And I'm Jeff Yoders. Please follow us on Spotify and Apple Podcasts. And you can find other ENR Critical Path podcasts at enr.com/podcasts.
Thanks for listening.